Programming is sponsored by Mark Salvasian, Esquire. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
This is Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Mark Mancini, Sal Tartaglia, and Marianne Castello. Talking everything sports, everything Philly style. Liberty Bell Smack, right here, right now.
Liberty Bell Smack right here on WWDB AM Talk 860. We're here every Thursday evening, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's prime time, drive time here in the East. And I'm Marianne Castella, your host, and I'm ready for that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style. You can listen five ways, whichever works best for you. You can tune in to WWDB AM Talk 860. And if we've gone dark, no worries. You could find us on HD2 radio station 97.5, or you can download the WWDB radio app, listen to us anytime, anywhere, or go to WWDBAM.com and click Listen Live. And you can call, listen, or talk to us and our guests at 888-329-3306. And I know he's waiting in our green room. He is a broadcast vet, born in Pittsburgh, but raised in sunny LA. You know him from his years in the ring with Extreme Professional Wrestling on TV. He's got over 17 years behind the mic from San Diego to Los Angeles with SiriusXM, the SB Nation American Forces Network, and now Philly on WWDBAM, as well as the Saucy Spin online radio show. Yeah. And the Breaking It Down podcast. If it's sports, he's done it, or he knows all about it. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Mark Mancini. Hey, Mark.
Man, I'm Jack, man. I'm feeling good. A little cheesesteaks running up the Rocky statue. The guests tonight are amazing. Each and every week, we keep getting great guests. So it's all Philadelphia that does this for us each and every week. And I'm so blessed to have the best moderator in the business. And you, Marianne Castello, and having my sidekick, Sal, to the left of me really ripped us each week.
I know. And you know what? He's sitting there right in that city of brotherly love, looking as handsome as ever. And he is a product of the schools and playing fields of Drexel Hills, Delaware County, by way of Southwest Philadelphia. He's been in the Navy. He's been in the construction industry and was a nuclear medicine tech. And while doing all that, he even had time to compile over 30 years of highlights and stats of World Series games and published his first book, World Series Chronology. While doing press for the book, he developed a taste for broadcasting. And here he is. Let's welcome our host, Sal Tartaglia. Hey, Sal.
Hey, Mayor. Hey, Mayor. How's everybody? Hello, Philadelphia. I hope everybody's stoked to watch the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks.
Would think so. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what, Sal, while you're there in the city of brotherly love and we're talking about Super Bowl, if anybody has any issues with their car because they want it to look perfect when they paint their favorite team on the car, how do they do that?
My friend Joey Traynor has been making cars look brand new for generations. His crack staff at JT Auto Body are second to no one enhancing your vehicle. So if you want to avoid substandard workmanship, give JT a call or visit him at 416 Primus Avenue, Fulcroft, Pennsylvania. His number is 610-534-1643. Tell him Sal sent you.
So which team, Sal, are you painting on your car?
I usually stay with the NFC because of my affiliation with the Eagles. Unless it's a team that I completely despise, like if Dallas was in, I think AFC would be my choice. But I'm up in the air. It's a good Cinderella story. You gotta love what's happening in Cincy with Barrow, and that's where my heart is. Logically, it's not a slam dunk to say that the Rams will beat them, because you never know what Rams team shows up, number one. But I think the home field thing is probably going to get them over the hump.
That's rare. A possibility. And guess what? We have a home field advantage right here on our show today. And we're going to get right to our first guest because we have some great guests tonight. He is a former amateur and professional boxer, a television producer, author, and frequent talk show guest. He was born just outside of Philadelphia in Broomall, Pennsylvania, and followed in his father's footsteps, becoming a successful boxer, winning the Philadelphia Junior Olympic boxing title at the young age of 13 and appearing in Sports Illustrated in August 1983. By the age of 19, he became a professional boxer. He has a truncated professional boxing career, winning all nine of his bouts in Pennsylvania, four wins by knockout. Eight of his bouts took place at the legendary Blue Horizon in North Philadelphia, where he entered the ring as the Jewish Rocky. He was promoted by International Boxing Hall of Fame promoter Russell Peltz of Philadelphia. In 1994, he slipped and fell and sustained a career-ending neck injury. Due to his knowledge in the sport of boxing, he reinvented himself by promoting boxing matches. He had a deep understanding of the benefits for promotion based on his and his family's history with boxing. In 1997, he began promoting celebrity and local figure boxing matches. His first bout matched John Bolaris, a local weather personality, and Diego Ramos, a radio disc jockey. Due to a very high interest level that was generated from the bout, he promoted additional celebrity matches in major venues in Philadelphia and Atlantic City, New Jersey. His bouts he arranged included personalities that included Jose Canseco, Danny Bonaducci, and others. In 2002, he was successful in forming a relationship with the Fox Network, which aired shows that featured celebrities who wanted to attempt to remain or regain attention in the national media. His first fight card featured notorious figure skater Tanya Harding versus Paula Jones as the featured bout. In 2003, he wanted to continue what he started on the Fox Network and became the founder and CEO of Official Celebrity Boxing. Celebrities use this platform to return to the spotlight. Promotion, programming, and shows featured national figures, including Cato Kaelin, Amy Fisher, Joe Buttafuoco, and Rodney King in matches. He told the New York Post, "If you had 15 minutes of fame, I'll give you the 16th," which inspired his nickname, the 16-Minute Man. He also published a book with the same title and a movie which is currently in development, both which cover all of his life to date and plays around the standard boxing theme of success, fall, and revival. He has gained a national media presence, appearing multiple times on The Howard Stern Show, Cataldi in the Morning on WIP Sports Radio in Philadelphia, CNN, TMZ, and The Daily Mail. He continues to promote fights in Miami, Atlantic City, and in the Los Angeles area. He's here in our studio with his boxing gloves getting ready for our bout. Let's welcome Damon Feldman to Liberty Bell Smack. Hey, Damon.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you. Can I be honest with you? I've never, like, I've been through everybody. You know that. That was the most fantastic.
She's the greatest.
Incredible.
She is.
I need you to be at my movie. Like, I need you to be at to intro me at the premiere for my movie. That on March 12th. You are phenomenal. Like, honestly, I have goosebumps and almost tears in my eyes. Really, like, thank you.
That
was incredible. Thank you.
Now we're going to have to go put a help wanted sign to get a new person to replace Mary.
She's amazing. Unbelievable. That was pretty damn incredible. I'll be honest with you.
She's definitely the stir that stalls this, that stirs this drink. The straw that stirs this drink. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Hey, Damon, let me start it off here. You come from Broomall, Pennsylvania. When I think of the city, I've never been there, but it sounds like a boxing mentality. Like, did you start, like, banging brooms at an early age over each other's heads or whatever? Where is Broomall, Pennsylvania? Let our listeners know.
So it's a suburb of Philadelphia. It's about 5 miles out of Philadelphia. Just a great town, you know. I was born, raised there. It was, you know, part of my building up to where I got to my life and career. It's really interesting. It's a real nice town.
Okay, I see a lot of good fighters come out of Boston,
yeah,
Philly, New York, Detroit. Why is that the hotbed of a lot of great fighters across this country coming out of those neck of the woods? Is it just following that whole Rocky regimen, lifting, you know, meats and everything? I mean, what is it? Because it's a hotbed. Those four cities in particular bring a lot of great fighters from this country.
Could be the East Coast. You know, I don't know. I mean, you don't see too many big fighters down south. Florida. Excuse me. But I don't know. Philadelphia is just like, it was just, it's the hotbed of boxing. You said it was the capital of boxing at one time, like Blue Horizon USA Tuesday night fights. It was pretty amazing.
I think that economics might have something to do with today's game. In the past, you're right, though. People from Philly, the Eastern Seaboard, holding up the reputation mentality has a lot to do with today's game. But in the past, as you go through the different decades in history, you see economics plays a good role. Jewish were really dominant fighters in the 20s.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you had the influx of the Italians, and then went on to the blacks and the Spaniards.
Yeah.
But today's game, a lot of guys don't want to get punched in the face to make a buck. But back in the old days, it wasn't really a bad trade-off, you know? So, but I think that has traditionally a lot to do with it. But today's game, you do have guys that don't need the money. They love the game.
Well, that's true. But I don't think I ever needed the money. You know, my dad raised us. I had a crazy upbringing. My mom was a quadriplegic in a wheelchair when I was younger. She was brutally assaulted. But long story short, boxing was more therapy for me. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, the house in Broomall was like a boxing training camp. All the fighters from Philly came out there. Frank the Animal Fletcher, Anthony Two Gun Fletcher. These are two African-American guys. They raised me when my mom got injured and would stay at the house when my dad was at work. And so, you know, it's like an all-cultural thing with what I see in boxing. You know what I mean? Like boxing, being a white kid from a Jewish kid out of the suburbs, that helped me, man. You know what I mean? I would advise anybody, any person in the world to get their kid in boxing, especially because of the bullying, and it's very important.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. Your father kept trying to get me in the ring, and I had delusions of grandeur that I was going to be a major leaguer, so I didn't want to risk it. But anyway, with respect to Russell Peltz took you under his wing early on in your career. How much of an influence was he, or was he just a money guy?
I don't know. I mean, Russell was always, I used to call him Uncle Russell, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was great at what he did, and, you know.
Were you aware that Blinky Palermo, even in his late, I think he was in his 90s then, I met him at LeBec Finn, and he... He wanted Russell Peltz stopped. I don't know why. I don't know why Blinky still wanted in the game, because he was a major player in Chicago, and now it was time for him to just smell the roses. Man, he was putting feelers out to try to get the Peltz's work. I thought it was comical.
The guy I was raised, he was like a great grandpa to me, was Sam Margolis. He was a big part of the Jewish mob, and he was a guy who, you know, had Sonny Liston. He was affiliated with Palermo. I don't know. It's just the way the road went. You know what I mean? And that's where it was.
Yeah. You know, Damon, who did you pattern yourself after growing up? Who did you want to be like?
Honestly, my dad was my idol. Loved that guy with all my heart. Toughest guy I've ever met. But we used to get in some crazy fights. And he's probably the reason I really, like, decided not to fight anymore. Like, after I got injured, like, I could have continued. The fighting, and, you know, we'd be in North Philly at a training. We're only two white guys in the gym. All of a sudden, I get in a fight with him. I hit him in the back. I got pissed. I don't know. And he pulls his gun out. You know what I mean? Like, crazy stuff, man. Like, you know, you read my book, it's all in there, and you'll see it in the film when it comes out. I don't know, man. Boxing is something.
I was in the book recently, and, on page 16, you talk about getting into promoting, but you don't really, like, you attribute your affinity for boxing to your father, even training to your father, but you don't really say, does anybody in the media give you a shot? Because you helped me a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. I was trying to knock doors down.
Pleasure,
when you would
man.
Be on Cataldi, I'd say, you know, give me a shout out. Eventually, you plugged me into Lloyd Remick, who got me an interview here for my book, which turned into this gig. So
awesome.
I appreciate it, and thank you so much.
Of course.
But
man.
Did anybody in the media open a door, give you a hand, you know, get you started?
Yeah.
It's funny how close it is.
Well, he's going to love to hear this, because the man who really got me started And he always says to me, all the stars, all the people I've ever worked with, no one ever reminds me, but Stu Bykofsky.
He was
he was the big gossip guy here in Philly. And, you know, he'd always hype me up in the tabloids, Dan Gross. And from there, it just went to TMZ, then Howard Stern 27 times, Wendy Williams, now I'm on, you know, I was on all the time till her show got on. She got a little messed up. And now, you know, celebrity boxing is a good space where I'm at right now with my career, because I'm sort of like the WWE version of boxing, and I'd fit up Mark's alley, because we're like, you know, I've used the Sandman. Nikolai Volkov fought for me. Brutus the Barber Beefcake. I got to tell you the story about Beefcake, though. So the Wing Bowl, the Wing Bowl champ was taking on Jose Canseco, and Canseco had to pull out last minute because his dad unfortunately died. And long story short, I didn't know who to call, so I called Beefcake, like the, what they call it, 23rd hour or whatever. It was like, I had 15 hours before the fight. He drove all the way down from Boston. I worked the deal out with him. He came in, took on the Wing Bowl champ. He got hit with one punch, and then he just fell out. Like, didn't go down, but he didn't tell me his jaw was reconstructed. And that ended that. But then I'm there, like the Sandman. He, you know who the Sandman is? He's fought for me like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10 times.
Give him the Budweisers.
Oh, yeah, that's all he did. He does the most incredible. He's great at the, his entrances are amazing.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Well, you've been on all the shows, but now you're listening to Damon Feldman right here on Liberty Bell Smack. And if you're just tuning in, know that you could find us on Facebook Live, both on WWDB AM Talk 860 page, or right on Liberty Bell Smack, or you can call us at 888-329-3306. Back to you, Sal.
Yeah, Damon, your book, 16 Minute Man, was turned into a movie, and it's going to be the Pennsylvania premiere, I believe, right? March 12th.
So that's the documentary, Celebrity Boxing 16th Minute, surrounded around me getting on the pay-per-view, the Lamar Odom, Aaron Carter fight. But that movie is coming. I mean, that's my goal, the biopic, yes.
So the 12th of March at 7 p.m. at the Anthony's Restaurant in Paxson Hollow Country Club. This is going to be a feature of the documentary or the movie?
The documentary. Okay. I was able to, you know, get... I talked to producers into doing it in my hometown first, because that's where I really started. And that's what's going to be in Anthony's.
How far along is the movie in production?
Well, you know, there's a script done, everything like that. But I got so busy with celebrity boxing, I sort of, you know, it's second step right now. Like, my focus right now is on celebrity boxing and, you know, 4 to 5 fights a year. So I travel around now.
So still a lot of hands-on, even though it's in its final stages. You don't have people doing it for you.
No. I mean, right. I have, you know, Jackie Barrock, and, you know, she's a good woman. She's actually worked for Lloyd Remicka. She's, you know, pushing it. We're going to get it done. It's just a matter of time. Well, because my focus right now is, like, really, I go city to city trying to put these fights on. And, you know, it's a tough road, but I have a good niche. I'm a sports entertainment niche, and it's working in Miami and down here.
Well, you know, I have a lot of time on my hands, semi-retired. I have a thundering right hand. I'm stocky like you, and I'm friendly in the camera. So if you have any ideas about a leading role or a stunt guy in the ring, I'm available.
Maybe we get
another guy. We're going to have to put water.
Let your hair go gray. You'll be my dad.
That would be a good role. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Damon, you kind of look like, I don't know if anybody's ever said this to you, you kind of look like Damian Priest from the WWE. Has anybody ever told you that?
Nah, man, a lot of people say, because I shave my head, is like John Cena. No, not John. What's the wrestler's name? The big wrestler, former Olympic wrestler.
Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle.
Kid from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, sometimes. And that's funny.
Hey, listen, you're making the rounds. You've done TMZ. You've done the Philly shows. You know, you've been on the Howard Stern. Where do we rate with you on Liberty Bell Smack, my brother?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I got to be honest with you. You're pretty amazing. I like Sal. But Mary Ann's intro right now, I got to say, she got to be the number. This could be the number one, man, I'll tell you. I don't really do a lot of interviews because I really love Sal. But so I said, I'll do this, like, because, you know, I have a big platform now, and I just like to really focus on what I do. And, you know, I like, hopefully the films tells the story. People go read my book. they'll come out there. But you're definitely Marianne killed it. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. We'll just ride her coattails all the way to the premiere March 12th.
100%. I think, my man. Hey, we're coming to LA with that, but maybe Marianne has to take over Wendy Williams' new show or show since Marianne Williams there. Come on, I'm going to talk to her producers, Marianne.
Okay. Hey, Dame, do you want to tell us again the date and the time when this premiere is going to be? And are any A-list people going to be there?
It's going to be Saturday, March 12th at Anthony's Paxton Hollow in Broomall, Pennsylvania, my hometown. I'm real excited. I don't know who's going to be there. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, hitting me up or promoting. I got a few hundred thousand followers, so, you know, hopefully you can't do more than 200 people. So I know tickets are selling. So I'm really probably going to just donate the money to charity, probably to, like, I'm really big into bullying, like teachantibullying.org is Carmen, I'm Claudio Cirillo. And, you know, I'm really about bullying kids. Like, I couldn't imagine a kid being bullied and, you know, it just gets me off, excuse me, but, you know, like, yeah. That's why boxing, you know, teach people respect, you right. know what I mean? And right. I've always been respectful. I hit brick walls, definitely drinking, stupid mistakes, but...
But violence is a last resort. That's a good cause, man.
Definitely, but getting, you know, into, I love to give back. I love helping people. I love seeing people succeed, too. I played this whole thing out where I'm at in the worst time of my life. And, you know, I'm just really blessed and lucky to be very successful in what I do. And to give back is a great thing. And that's the main thing of this. Like, I was in this first to be famous. Then it was about the money. Now I don't care about famous. I'm going to make the money. But more importantly, I really love helping people. Like, I want to see... good things happen, and it gets me sick, like what happened through the pandemic and what everybody went through. And but that's my two cents. I know it's about, you know, my film or whatever you try to talk about.
Well, that's good. It should be a great event because everybody wants to see the local kid, you know, make bigger. With respect to the bullying and all, I mean, if people don't realize, you get, when you give somebody, when you help somebody, you get as much from that as the person that's giving it.
Listen, I'm not going to think what made me, my today's day was unbelievable because, you know, I had a drinking issue. I wasn't an alcoholic at all, but I love giving back to this woman who's a mother. I don't want to say names. So I went into my friend's recovery house, Paramount Recovery. And so I paid for her month because she couldn't find it, you know, but I felt bad, but that's it. Yeah, I love helping people.
That's good.
And the film's going to be great.
You'll be blessed for all that. I'm holding up a copy. If it's Damon's book, get yourself a copy. Do yourself a favor.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great. And if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here on WWDB AM Talk 860. And we were just speaking with the wonderful Damon Feldman. And while we were walking around, I know people were training Sal. People might have just stopped their brakes when you held up a copy of his book. And now they might have had a little fender bender. What are we going to do about that?
If I was you, I'd bring my car to J2 Auto Body located in Fulcroft at 416. Primus Avenue. He'll make you think that your car never had any dents. Owner Joey Trainer has assembled a championship team of certified technicians that will have your car back to you operating safely with that showroom look. Call him at 610-534-1643 and don't forget to tell him Sal sent you.
Yeah, Sal sends us everywhere. And in fact, I have a special shout out to people who are watching on Facebook Live. And I'd like to shout out to Mickey Delaney, a faithful listener every single week. He wrote in, he's saying hello to Mark and to Sal, myself, and the special guests. So thank you, Mickey, for tuning in.
Mickey's our biggest fan.
Yes, he is. And you know what? Our biggest fan is going to meet our next guest right now. He is a former professional baseball pitcher who has an illustrious 22-year career in the major leagues for the Minnesota Twins, Texas Rangers, Pittsburgh Pirates, Cleveland Indians, and California Angels. In 1969, he was drafted by the Minnesota Twins in the third round of the MLB amateur draft from San Diego High School in Garden Grove, California. After playing just 21 minor league starts, he was called to the major leagues on June 2nd, 1970, at the age of 19. During his first season, he had 10 victories and was named American League Rookie Pitcher of the Year by the Sporting News. In 1973, he pitched 9 shutouts, the most of any American League pitcher that season. In 1976, he was traded to the Texas Rangers, where he posted his 2.74 career ERA, which still remains as the best in team history. On December 8, 1977, he went to the Pittsburgh Pirates in the first four-team blockbuster deal in Major League Baseball history that totaled 11 players changing teams. While being with the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1978, he led the team in ERA, strikeouts, and complete games. By 1979, his 20 no decisions were the most by an MLB starting pitcher in a season dating all the way back to 1908. In 1980, he was traded to the Cleveland Indians. By 1984, he had one of his best seasons with a 19-7 record with a 2.87 ERA. In 1985, he pitched 293.2 innings and completed 24 games, a feat that has not been repeated since. In 1989, he went to California Angels and pitched a 2.73 ERA for a 17-5 record in his first season. He pitched for the MLB All-Stars in the 1993 World Port Tournament in Rotterdam and made his retirement official. He was pitching coach for the Netherlands in the 2009 World Baseball Classic. Now, he dominates the words all-time. He is the 14th all-time pitched innings with a total of 4,970 innings. During his career, he started 685 games and completed 242 of those starts, equaling over 35% of his starts, and was able to throw a total of 60 shutout games. He led the league with 5 shutouts in 1985 while playing with the Cleveland Indians. He led his league 3 times in shutouts during a season and worked over 200-plus innings over 17 times in his career. Only 16 pitchers in over 150 years of MLB history have reached the coveted strikeout level of 3,000. Our special guest tonight is the 5th all-time for total strikeouts by a pitcher, with a whopping total of 3,701 strikeouts. He led the American League in strikeouts while playing for the Cleveland Indians in 1985. He is the 27th all-time in total wins by a pitcher, with an impressive total of 287 victories. One of those victories included his no-hitter in 1977, playing for the Texas Rangers against the California Angels. He was a 2-time MLB All-Star selection, both in 1973 for the Minnesota Twins and in 1985 for the Cleveland Indians. He's a 2-time member of the World Series Championship Clubs, one series in 1979 with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and one series in 1987 with the Minnesota Twins. In 1996... he became a television color analyst for the Minnesota Twins, calling games for WCCO-TV and Midwest Sports Channel, later Fox Sports North. One of his trademarks was circling fans with the telestrator on screens, and fans both home and at road games carried signs to the game saying, "Circle me, Bert." He appeared as himself in the 1990 James Belushi film, Taking Care of Business. He was also a notorious dugout prankster, earning the name Frying Dutchman because he frequently set fire to his teammates' shoelaces, a practical joke known as Hot Foot. During his time with the California Angels, the team's clubhouse fire extinguisher read, "In case of Blylevin, pull." In 2011, he was elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. In the same year, he was inducted into the Minnesota Twins Hall of Fame, where his number 28 uniform was retired by the organization. He was best known for his curveball. MLB Hall of Fame third baseman Brooks Robinson was quoted saying, "His curveball was nasty, I'll tell you that, enough to make your knees buckle." Bert was a terrific pitcher, a dominating pitcher. And now he's giving us his pitch right here, curving into Philly and possibly burning down our house. Let's get that fire extinguisher ready, and let's have a big Liberty Bell smack welcome to Bert Blylevin. Hey, Bert.
Wow.
Oh, geez. My goodness. You know, I agree with Damon. You're going on the road with Damon and me. That's unbelievable. Thank you so much, Marianne. Hey.
We have Marianne going Hollywood with Damon. We've got Sal beating up Phillips 66 gas pumps. I have nowhere to go except to go to Fort Myers and be with you to learn how to throw a curveball.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on. And Damon did a great job. You know, David Feldman, I'm going to get that book. I want to see that book that Damon put out. And I'm looking forward to the movie.
You know, Bert, 22 years. I'll tell you one thing. And we've talked before. If God decides to send me back down after I go up there, I want to be a Major League Baseball pitcher, because to travel the country, to play like you played 22 years, to have an illustrious broadcasting career, to throw a no-hitter, to be on two World Series teams, I mean, the All-Star games and everything. Where do we start here? It's just amazing. What is the one, if you could take one of those, which is the one that you hold dear to your heart?
Well, first of all, coming from Holland, you know, and growing up in Southern California, you know, we went from Holland to Canada into the United States as an immigrant. Basically, I had an opportunity to learn baseball at a very young age, and then getting the opportunity to come up at a young age, at 19 years old. I think what I hold dear to my heart the most, of course, being in a Hall of Fame is number one. I think the other ones as a player is the World Series, 1979, We Are Family, Pittsburgh Pirates, 1987, Minnesota Twins. Those are the two, I think, as a player. All the other accolades that Marianne was talking about, those are nice, the shutouts, the innings pitched, but you do it as a team. You know, Damon talked about that. You know, as a fighter, you're out there in, you know, you're out there fighting, but as a baseball player, you're dependent on eight or nine other guys behind you. And that's the thing that I appreciate the most, two World Series rings that I have, along with the Hall of Fame ring.
You know, 17 years, 200 plus innings. I mean, you got guys today that can't even go 100 innings. I mean, that's a consistent pattern that is just simply amazing. Tell us about that.
Well, I always tell Mark that, you know, that's when men were men, believe it or not. I mean, when I came up at 19, you know, you're expected to go nine innings every time out. 25 complete games in 1973. I pitched 325 innings and wanted to play winter ball. My arm felt great. Today's game, I don't like. I can be honest with you. Whoever put the pitch count in at 100 pitches, I said on the air for 25 years, I was still waiting for the first guy to actually throw his 101st pitch and actually blow up on the mound. Unbelievable. You're telling me that they're putting everybody under one hat, and you know, you have Justin Verlander. He's a workhorse. You know, Mark Scherzer. He's a workhorse. These guys cannot be put under one hat. So I don't like the way the baseball is being played right now. As far as on the pitching side, we pitched every fourth day. Now they're pitching every 5 or 6 days. You know, if they pitch five innings. Actually, the last couple of years, I've seen guys walk off the mound after pitching six innings and tip their hat because they threw 93 pitches and they knew their job was done. Our job wasn't done until we got that 27th out. That's the way I looked at it.
Bert, I believe that these pitch count problems begin in Little League. I think the kids are being overused, because if that was the case, then why couldn't they correct everything that they're doing in the minors before they come up, so they wouldn't need to put a leash on these pitchers? Because then I thought about it, and I said, I just asked myself a question. Then I thought, well, then why don't they teach them how to bunt in the minors either? So I think we're failing the players as a, you know, young men and adults. I think as kids, because I think the problem starts long before you got to worry about 100 pitches in the big leagues, if you make it that far.
Yes. Sal, I agree. I don't like the analytics that are in the game today, you know, just to kind of put everybody, like I mentioned, under one hat. Everybody's different. Twins have a guy, Jose Barrios, that just signed a big contract with the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, you're telling me he can't go nine innings. You know, I think, you know, last year, how many complete games? There's only four guys that threw over 400 innings, or 200 innings last year.
Right.
You know, that's incredible. Yeah. So, you know, you look at the game and you hope it's moving in the right direction. You hope that this lockout right now that's going on, smarter heads will prevail and they can get these guys back in spring training and the season can start at the end of March. I've been through a lot of them from 1972 all the way to 1990. Yes, is there a winner and a loser? To me, the loser is the fans.
Yes.
You know, they want to see baseball. They want these players on the field, especially what's going on now with the COVID and everything that's going on. Come on, get them back on the field. Let's get on with life and let's move forward.
Well, the way you expressed your affinity for the World Series with both your teams, well, both the teams you went to the series with, I was going to ask a question, but you sort of answered it. All-Star Game or World Series, by far, you probably, picked the World Series over that. But what I wanted to ask you about the two different series you were involved in, the first one was actually, the second one was with your first team. You had gone and come back. But the first World Series you were in was with the 79 Pirates. And although you had much longer career and a lot more accolades in Minnesota, you won the title there. You were a player for 11 years there. Your number 28 was retired. You spent a lot of time in the booth afterwards. Your induction to the Hall of Fame came while you were an announcer for the Twins. So I'm sure there's a lot more things that make you gravitate towards your time in Minnesota over your time in Pittsburgh. But I was just curious. You actually had better World Series and league championships stats as a Pirate. Not that they were bad, Minnesota, but you had the one loss in the series. But it didn't matter because you still won. But I wanted to get back to the 79 series. Even though you probably, now of course I'm guessing, I didn't let you answer, and I apologize for that. I'm guessing that you picked Minnesota over your time in Pittsburgh because it was brief and all. But when you beat the Orioles, did it sort of give you some satisfaction? Because the first time you were in a playoff was in the 70s, 1970, I believe, and the Twins were in a couple back-to-back league championship series back when the format was a best of three games. And the Orioles were just dominating everybody, sweeping everybody, doing everything. And when they beat you guys in 70, I'm just curious, when the Pirates beat them back in 79 in the series, did that make you – did they give you a sense of revenge, retribution? I'm just curious. As a fan, I know that's how I'd feel.
You know, so in 1970, when we played the Orioles, I was actually supposed to start game three, which was going to be in Baltimore. But the Twins lost game one and two in Minnesota. We did.
Right.
And on the plane ride from Minneapolis to Baltimore, I was informed by Bill Rigney and Marv Grissom, my pitching coach, that they're going to go with Jim Cott over myself. And as a 19-year-old, of course, I was pretty pumped up to pitch against the Orioles.
Yeah,
I ended up pitching a couple innings in relief. And, you know, we ended up losing three straight to 69 and 70 Orioles. They're unbelievable, not only pitching-wise, but offensive, defensive-wise, they're a great ball club.
I think
in 1979, we were led by a great man in Chuck Tanner. We had great guys. You know, when I came up, I had Harmon Killebrew. That was one of my teammates. I had Bob Allison. I had Jim Perry, Jim Cott, who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame. There were so many guys, Rod Carew, Tony Oliva, when I first came up. But in 1979, Willie Stargell, my God, you know, how can you not say – nothing but positive things about Pops. You know, we had he played first. We had Manny Sanguea and Ed Ott, Steve Nicosia behind the plate. We had Phil Garner at second, Tim Foley at short, Bill Matlock, who, you know, won batting titles at third base, Bill Robinson out left, Omar Marino in center, Dave Parker, God bless him. You know, he's battling Parkinson's right now.
Richie Hebner.
We had a great ball club, led by, you know, a very good starting staff, but we had Kent DeColvi as our closer with a lot of guys to set him up, like Grant Jackson and Enrique Romo and guys like that. So, yeah, in 1979, my 3 years in Pittsburgh are great memories, great memories.
Okay.
You know, when you look at it, Bert, in 79, you know, Manny Sanguin was traded to Oakland for Chuck Tanner. You picked up Bill Matlock halfway during that season. And when you look at that team, bringing up Willie Stargell, and that was my idol growing up, that team just, I mean, when you looked at them knocking off the Expos, and then take us through the games in Philadelphia, because the Pirate-Philly wars were unbelievable back then, figuring out who was going to represent the National League East. And then to take that Oriole team out in 79, after that, when you guys fell behind 3-1, a lot of people in Pittsburgh thought maybe this might be the end. But here you go. You rolled it like 1971 and rolled those birds right back to Baltimore. Take us through the Philly Wars, the National League Championship Series, and then going into the World Series with the Orioles in 79.
Well, Mark, I can be honest with you. As a Pittsburgh Pirate that wore that, you know, the black and gold and our stripes and the Sturgill hats, we didn't like the Phillies. You know, there was that hatred that we had, you know, and we had some good fisticuffs with them. Actually, I started one of them. I told you earlier that we had a good rhubarb. But, you know, at that time, it was the Phillies, the Expos, and the Pirates. And when we finally won in 1979 to get into the World Series against the Orioles, yeah, we were down 3-1, but we knew we had a key guy, and that was Willie Stargell. You know, in game 5, Jim Rooker, who was started against Mike Flanagan, it was a 1-0 ball game after 5 innings. And Chuck Tanner pinch hit for him. And then I came in relief and pitched 4 shutout innings. We won 7-1. But our offense had not really taken off those first 3 or 4 games. And all of a sudden we went back to Baltimore. Now it's 3-2. And we jumped on Willie Stargell's back. He took us to the promised land. And I'll tell you what, you got a great guy that you admire in the late Willie Stargell. He's a great man.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it, those, you know, baseball back then, the double hitters, the rain delays, playing all this. And we've talked about how baseball's changed today earlier. Bill Madlock, I interviewed not too long ago, and he's not a big fan of the putting a runner at second base. He thinks that's kind of like softball. I mean, baseball was never meant to have a time clock on it. And some of these rules are just hard to fathom. Any thought to that?
Well, the biggest thing for me is, as a former broadcaster for 25 years, there's like 2 minutes, 10 seconds in between innings. You watch the LPGA, you watch other sports, and they will come back maybe a minute, and then they'll show a commercial on the other side of your screen, like on the, you know, there, and let the commercial go. But get the guys back on the field. You're talking about 18 to maybe 30 minutes if you eliminate some of that time in between. But those are the people that pay the salary of all the players and ownership. So what do you do? You know, how do you work around it? Baseball is a game that you go to the ball. I don't like three and a half hour ball games. You know, back in the 70s, 80s, a game would last 2.5 hours only because we were allowed to go out and we threw 2 pitches between innings. You tell the home plate umpire, let's go, and let's go, guys. Now you have so much other elements that come into play. Will it ever get back to being quicker? I don't think so, but I don't like, I got to go again. I don't like the analytics in the game. I don't like guys that went out of Harvard and Yale and all of a sudden telling a major league player where he should play and how he should play.
Well,
real fast. I know Sal's got a quick question. I was going to throw one real quick to you. The hardest hitter you ever faced and the one that you got the best of all the times.
You know, there wasn't anybody. I always, you know, people ask me that. Who was the hardest hitter you ever faced? Anybody with a bat. You know, these are major league players. You took nobody for granted. You know, maybe I was able enough to strike out a guy like Bo Jackson, you know. Bo Jackson was a strong SOB. I'll tell you what, if I struck him out the first 3 times when he was with Kansas City, I didn't want to face him the 4th time because he was on a mission, you know. So if you make one mistake, he's going to hit that ball a long way. But there, you know, you're talking about major league hitters. Hardest thing to do, I think, of any sport is to hit a round ball with a round bat. Think about how tough it is. And then when you got to face a guy like Sandy Koufax or Nolan Ryan, good luck, guys. Good luck.
Or worried about getting hit in the jibs. You know, all these factors go into it, separates the men from the boys. They said physics, the equation proves it is the single most difficult thing to do in all of sports, hitting a round ball or a round bat.
Amen. Yep. The hardest thing is to hit that corner down and away, too, with a fastball.
Bird, I wanted to get back to your 20 no decisions. Do you recall being like so close? Like, because, you know, I mean, you were 12-5, really good record. more than likely would have won 20 games that year. Do you recall any of them that stand out particularly that, you know, it was like a one-out-away thing or something?
You know what, Sal, I think the biggest thing, I was coming from the American League where I was averaging about 280, 290 innings a year. When I got traded to the Pirates in 1978, because of the hitter, pitcher's hitting, of course, I was not a very good hitter, to be honest with you.
Right.
So Chuck Tanner had the right to pinch hit for me in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning, which he did a lot of. And I don't, you know, if it's a 2-1 ball game and there's a man on second, two outs, and I come up, you know, he's going to pinch hit for me. I understood that, and that's where a lot of the no decisions came. You know, you're either down 2-1 or you're up, you know, 2-1, and then they tie the game and you get a no decision. Bottom line is, of the 37 starts I think I had that year, how many did we win? You know, that was a bottom line
right.
as a pitcher. 20 right. no decisions, yeah, you don't right. like that.
Right.
You don't like being taken. I was coming from the American League where I could go 9 innings every time out. One stint that I went 10, you know, times in a row, I went 9 innings. But you go to the National League, it's a different story. I like that baseball is bringing back the DH into both leagues.
Yeah.
I like that. What's going to happen, hopefully, when they negotiate and finish this thing up.
You know, I used to see you guys on the road, and boy, that road show during batting practice was something else. When the Pittsburgh Pirates would come to town launching, you know, shots into the bleachers and stuff. Did anybody ever mistake you guys for the Pittsburgh Steelers with Don Robinson and Dave Parker and Willie Stargell and everybody?
Well, I think about Jim Bibby, you know, we had some big men on that ball club, you know, not only, you know, Willie Stargell and Parker, as you mentioned, but we just had a great time. Chuck Tanner let us just go about our business. And sometimes, you know what, I can remember Willie Stargell, we'd have a tough game. Let's say we lose 2-1, walk in a clubhouse, and then you know, you're a little upset and you kind of go about your business. And then the jukebox would come on. And that's where kind of, you know, that's where Willie kind of took over and say, hey, it's behind us. Let's win again tomorrow. You know, let's get back on that winning track. And sure enough, we had a great time. We had great individuals on that ball club.
And you mentioned,
did you brush up on your golf game in on the West Coast? Because I know when you'd come out to the West Coast, you'd hit San Diego, San Francisco, and LA back then twice a year.
Well, you know, there's some beautiful courses. I got to play Torrey Pines that they just finished the tournament, you know, just last weekend. But no, I enjoy golf. Now that I'm retired, no longer broadcasting, golf is my new adventure in life.
Smell the roses. That's right. Listen, getting back to your brawls when you were in Pittsburgh, nobody ever mentioned Richie Hebner. I'm sure he brought his shovel to a lot of these brouhahas, and that's why you won.
Well, I wish I had played with Richie. I think he was more 71. He was not a teammate of mine, but I'll tell you what.
My apologies.
I believe I faced him a couple times, and yeah, he brought that shovel to the plate with him too.
Yeah. For the viewers that don't know, Richie Hebner's family owned a cemetery. So he was a grave digger, but not like a second job. It was his family business. So that's the reference I made to the shovel.
Hey guys, can I have Marianne reintroduce me again? She was awesome.
Hey Bert, that's the only reason I do this show. Every week she puts me on blast.
I just want to know what made you start setting shoelaces on fire. That's the one that got me.
Well, you know what? I think Sal or Mark mentioned earlier, you know.
The Frying Dutchman.
Pitcher. you know, it was the greatest life. Again, I came up at 19. I retired when I was 41, 42. As a pitcher, as a starter, you pitch every fourth day, fifth day. That means you have 3 or 4 days off. And you have to find ways to entertain yourself. And now, to me, when I lit a shoelace on fire, kids don't do this at home. It wasn't the regular players. It was always the guys on the bench, you know, that maybe fell asleep from time to time.
Well, shame on them.
We had a lot of fun. You light the shoelace on fire, then you scream, "Fire in the hole!" And then everybody has a good time. It was all in fun, believe me. We had a great time. And they got me in return, too, Marianne.
Real quick, did the Frying Dutchman moniker carry over into your booth career and the things you did with the Telestrator, the Circle Me Bird thing? Did that prankster persona spill over into your announcing?
No, because my broadcast partner at the time, Dick Bramer, we didn't make the money that we these players make. So we had to, you don't have that many pairs of shoes. You got a shoelace on fire, in the dugout, they'll give you a new pair of Adidas or Nike, whatever. But the Circle Me Burt just found that started with the Telestrator that Fox gave me, kind of like John Madden,
right?
The great John Madden started circling people. Or he'd do the X's and the O's, and this running back goes here, and defensive back is here, and they gave this Telestrator to me, and they said we'd like for you to use it, and I thought, there's a fly ball to say left field or left center, am I going to show the flight of the ball? People see it. So one thing led to another. It was in Kansas City many years ago, and there was a Twin fans there, great Twin fans come down. And they said, come on, got to use it. So there's this one guy that had a Twin hat on. I circled him, and I said, you are hereby circled. We went from Kansas City to Detroit. Somebody brought a sign and said, we drove 646 miles from, I think it's Detroit Lakes, into Detroit. So I circled them. We came back home. People brought signs. And the biggest thing about the Circle Me Burt is, to me, it was a way for us in a booth to get to be part of the fans. I mean, I ran into so many fans that would go out and get, a board, and they would write where they're from and circle the and the fans were part of the game. And that's what I want to see right now. I want the fans back enjoying baseball. I don't want to see the lockout. I don't want to see, the players not being able to play the game that they're so God-given ability to do. I want the owners to get them back on the field so we can start the season on time and the fans can appreciate that. In 1987, you mentioned 79, 1987, we won 4 games at home in Minnesota because the fans were electric and they really motivated us in 1987. So believe me, people that listen out there, if you're a fan of baseball and you don't think you mean something, you do to every player that's down on that field.
Absolutely. And I couldn't have said that any better. And I know we're in squares, but I'm going to try to circle you, Bert. See? Yeah.
Well, I will get you, Marianne.
And a pass over to Mark and one to Sal. But I cannot believe another hour has gone by on Liberty Bell Smack. And, Bert, I know that you're retired and you're playing golf, but if people wanted to reach out to you, do you have a way of doing that?
Well, I actually sell a lot of my baseball memorabilia on eBay at BertBlyleven.com. I have a website at BertBlyleven.com. I don't know all this stuff, but my wife takes care of a lot of this stuff. But, over the years, you collect a lot of this stuff, and about 20% of what we take in through After the Net that go into different charities that my wife Gail and I support. So, yeah, you get a chance to look at eBay at Burp Lyleven, see what's out there. We have a lot of fun selling all this stuff.
Well, our listeners, I guarantee, are about to do it. And we need to wrap up. But before you go, can you hang out a few minutes? Because we like to do a Liberty Bell Smack chant, and we'd like to include you, Bert.
All right.
Well, I can't believe it. We had a great guest tonight, Damon Feldman. Make sure you pick up his book, The 16-Minute Man. And next week on our show, we have the moderator of Baseball Pacific International, Matt Tallarini, with us. And we're going to have the host of the Rude Dog Show, Rudy Reyes. So that should be a fun show. Absolutely. And I have to say, guys, it's been so much fun, Mark, Sal, with our guests tonight.
To figure this out, Marianne. Are you going to Florida and with Bert down there? Or are you going with Damon Feldman to Hollywood? Because I might have to apply at that Geno's cheesesteak joint because... this show is going to be going to the birds and there's not going to be nobody here.
Well, we'll still get it to the red carpet some way, somehow. I'll guarantee that. But if you are just, you know, listening unto this show, we had a great show. You could always watch a replay on Facebook Live at Liberty Bell Smack. And if you're interested in joining our Liberty Bell Smack family as a sponsor, you can drop us a line at libertybellsmack@gmail.com. We would love to have you. And you have been listening to Liberty Bell Smack. It's that lip smack and trash talking good Philadelphia style. I'm your host, Marianne Costello, along with Mr. Mark Mancini and Sal Tartaglia. And we love to end every show with the Liberty Bell Smack chant. And the way we do that, Bert, is we start at 5, we count down to 1, and we all say Liberty Bell Smack. Can you do that with us?
Sure, I'd love to.
All right, here we go. 5. Bye. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Liberty Bell Smack!